Special guest, Brian Cluck, is going to review for us, for all those you faithful podcast listeners who've been anxiously awaiting the next episode.
I would have to say that the place I'd like to see a need for antiplatelet therapy based on the evolution of having started in interventional cardiology long before there were such things as intracoronary stents. With the earlier forms of therapy, there really wasn't very much need for fancy. To everybody's reasonable surprise, back in the 1980s, would be better for long-term results with intracoronary therapy. So doses of antiplatelet and antithrombotic drugs were used fairly routinely. Was a study called the STARS trial, which pitted platelet and antithrombotic therapy with Coumadin. And surprisingly, the winner, actually single antiplatelet therapy was better due to lower bleeding than the anticoagulant as the drug of choice. But that, of course, had many side hematologic side effects. And shortly that, clopidogrel became the drug clopidogrel became the drug of choice. In parallel, the fine-tuning of those devices allowed those to be placed in many, many different areas in the coronary tree, and certainly in the 90s has come to a sort of a plateau point now, but certainly integral to. I think the biggest thing that people realized is that with stenting, even before drug-eluting stents, even in the area, this awful phenomenon of subacute thrombosis. That dual antiplatelet, and that sometimes, however, it happened in spite of the fact that patients were on dual antiplatelet armor of what was clearly a very, very ubiquitous drug, clopidogrel, and so that's kind of where I think we really has something in antiplatelet therapy. There really is the clinical trial which pitted standard dose clopidogrel therapy a trial that was done for both the Triton-Timber-38 trial. There's no such thing as luck. In point of fact, they had less subacute thrombosis. They had an improved outcome. So it's a better drug for all comers in terms of reducing clinical events. Price you pay is that, and so that becomes a bit of an issue. So you need to sort of know patients that have a lower chance of bleeding, typically four places where you will clinically progress through. One of them is in lightweights. So a patient must, to offset the efficacy that the drug will provide. Patients greater than 75 years of age, also tough. The third area where there were some issue taking, those patients should probably not have this agent at the currently approved dose. We need to avoid the drug is in those patients who are going to, the post-CABG bleeding in those folks was much, much higher than in but if you take those four subcategories away, you will be left if they're placed on that drug. And the current recommendation after drug extension is a year of patients who have subacute thrombosis or who have been tested. Some of them have been just suggested one particular 100 milligrams as a loaded dose, and most of the interventional. But at the time that the Triton-Timber-38 trial was concocted, it needed to be against standard. Certainly in people who have a reason or even question for clopidogrel as a drug, dosing with 75 milligrams twice a day rather than once a day, that was thought to be expensive newer drugs. A trial that was presented within the last couple of months was a trial of that exact strategy. And the good news about the trial was that it clearly showed that excessive bleeding. The bad news, of course, is that it didn't work. So that strategy. The other point of interest for the Gravitas trial, at least it was by now, which is a bedside version of a much more labor-intensive lab. So again, we could lower the test trial, and we could show that it worked. But once again, in terms of clinical outcomes,
right,
it was not considering this. And in point of fact, this is a legitimate strategy. Is to add some called celostazole, fetal. This is something that's quite budded. Point of fact, the Japanese have done this on a number of occasions, and folks who have on the horizon is one other drug, which is called ticagrelor. That has improved efficacy compared to clopidogrel standard dosing. It's in the 38 trial. The advantage that ticagrelor has compared to clopidogrel was noted even in the CABG population. So it's a drug in prasugrel or clopidogrel. The reason this drug is my understanding and the subpopulation of North America did not, this particular drug, is to be approved in the United States. They recognize the United States. So that's that I think is the landscape for right now. There is Elendilor, which sounds a little like a place in the Lord of the Rings, but it is the world of antiplatelet therapy, particularly post-procedural antiplatelet therapy, is changing dramatically.
A lot of new coagulants either here on the horizon, and then we can
absolutely
get down to the individual patients. So could you speak to just for a second, are you using it a lot, kind of as a backup? I mean, and just, you can correct me immediately. I usually do clopidogrel 300, clopidogrel 600. And then prasugrel, I really haven't used also. Maybe you could kind of speak to it a little more about how you.
It's a challenge for a couple of reasons. The first, although not quite, that's that clopidogrel by November of this year will be generic. And at the point where it's in a population, and so in terms of the cost of medicine, that becomes a very big problem. Primary care cardiology access for people who have unstable coronary syndrome, and their patients be placed on clopidogrel, which is certainly appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
So in that efficacious, but yet more difficult in that rare patient population who might go on. Prasugrel has as a potential advantage is it is very rapidly metabolized after the patient ingests the dose. So you can wait for a longer period of time if that's the strategy. Coronary anatomy for some reason. That person, I think, if they don't have one of the four prohibitions, made it a little bit more possible for me to use Prasugrel more The biggest being a problem, of course, with a very cat nuisance, it is anything has frozen. Your listening audience who has had it. So to avoid that by a transradial approach means that you can obviate the once you define the anatomy, even key procedure, you can just get a 60 of prasugrel, you'll have already, and if you're not really that terribly concerned about bleeding, then you've got your load and you can just continue to do
Should I be doing heparin or low molecular weight? Who you would think about prasugrel, and then kind of make the platelet decision?
The Horizons and Acuity trial that we've done on how we treated patients periprocedurally in terms of the parenteral anti-CD38 inhibitors in the periprocedural timeframe, because it did definitely impact. And that was seen across all comers, whether it was large molecule or small molecule drug, down. But bivalrudin, in those latter trials that I mentioned earlier, bivalrudin as monotherapy with much, much less bleeding. Bleeding will be using bivalrudin as a drug. But there was a small heart attack risk inhibitors, particularly in the periprocedural period, and particularly in the laboratory. We need a 12 or 18 hour infusion afterwards, which affected this in any major way. Yeah, but I think you'll certainly see more of that.
More agents, more choices. thing.
No, certainly complicated, not entirely literature-based driven. That theology, right along, and appropriately criticized for it, is once we find an answer, particularly a drug-related something, or I think stones can certainly have been thrown at us, we never really, until thrombosis was really plain in our patient population, when we saw a lesion that needed to be fixed, sort of just a small afterthought. Mm-hmm. And we point to that, it's anything but a small afterthought, pharmacology afterwards.
That's some aspects, and I think in the critical thinking aspects, that's why we're so fortunate to have you here.
Well, I think that's one of the things that we could be faulted in, and it really does require constant thought, critical thought about when you do something to a patient on a regular basis. One of the interesting things that I foresee is that the newer agents, certainly 5-valbrutinib as a direct complement inhibitor, is a way of treating people particularly renders. I would say one of the biggest problems that we continue to have is in people who have air. And the literature to help us decide what
to get away from. We can cut down to these two things.
Absolutely.
People would be so much
quickly.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So I guess the basic offer new opportunities and new challenges. And so communicate on the right choice for the patient. Do you have any final thoughts? Questions or comments, feel free to email me at dan.valancius, D-A-L-A-N-C-I-U-S.